Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy to get 20% off your first month of cognitive behavioural therapy, with weekly sessions online with a therapist, in addition to worksheets, a journal, meditation and yoga videos, and unlimited messaging. There's strong evidence that CBT can help people who hoard, and accessing therapy online can be affordable and accessible. Find out more and get your discount at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. So I am here with Heather Matuozzo, who worked as a declutterer and then in 2009 founded Cloud's End, the first social enterprise in the UK to focus on hoarding. Both of her aunties were hoarders, and she is also the co-host of the Hoarding Stuff podcast. Heather, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well.
So, tell me about your podcast, first of all. How did that get going?
Well, so 2018 was a year of conferences for me. It was a really lucky year because I went to San Francisco and we had a conference in London at the Emirates Stadium. But I also went to one in Edinburgh that was run by a lady called Linda Fay, who runs LifePod, which is a very similar enterprise to mine, but in Scotland. And whilst there, I met this lovely guy called David. And I'd sort of said that I was interested in podcasting to Linda. And she said, oh, you need to talk to David because he knows all this techie stuff. And so I did get in touch with David. And he said, oh, I'm right at the beginning of it. I'm not sure. And so to start with, we just had these long phone conversations. And then with the event of pandemic and Zoom, suddenly the technology was accessible, whereas before it was a little bit like a bit scary. But so that's what we started. He said, why don't we just record our conversations? And so that was exactly how we started. We started just recording how we waffled along on the phone to each other, because David has hoarding issues himself, and so, but he's also extremely bright and funny, and so that was how it started. And then we started inviting people, but we still just sort of bumble along and have waffly conversations, but they always have the central theme of hoarding. We'd look at what are the alternative potential Christmas presents to buy somebody who has hoarding issues when you don't want to buy them more stuff, Yeah. But you do want to show them that you care, you know. And so we do things like that, yeah. But we do try to have fun. But we've had some really quite intense podcasts that we've done recently, that became building up to Hoarding Awareness Week as well, which is the 15th to the 19th of May.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that too, which there are some good things planned. Let's go back to the beginning. I said in the intro that both of your aunties hoarded. Mm-hmm. How aware were you when you were a child of that, or was it just how they were?
I wasn't aware that it was a thing, if you like, and I hadn't really counted my so both of my aunties are my mum's sisters, and so the middle sister, my mum's the youngest, and right. Then the middle sister, Auntie Ed, she was my favourite aunt. And then my Auntie Cal was the oldest sister. And so I didn't go to her house very often until I was a really, you know, in her past, her very later years. So I had no idea that she had this issue. But going to Auntie Ed's house, my sister and I loved it. So we knew, she did say to us, don't bring your friends. So there was a little bit of, you know, that sort of othering, if you know what I mean, that she was doing. But yeah, my sister and I loved it because, you know, sleeping on a pile of clothes, that was exciting. Staying up late, eating chips out of the wrapper, probably because there weren't any plates. But, you know, we didn't, these weren't the things that bothered us. The only thing that was scary about my auntie's house was there wasn't, it was an old terrace, an old Birmingham terrace, and there were no bathrooms. So this would have been in the 60s. Late 60s that we would go and stay there, and so if we wanted to use the toilet we'd have to go down a hoarded yard which was dark and there were no lights out there, and to a sort of a kludgy, you know, one of those old-fashioned patum patum clank clank type toilets, and there were no lights in there either, but that was the only downside. The rest of it was great fun. So we'd go on a Friday. We'd get on the bus on our own, which was exciting, and my aunt would meet me at the other end. And then we'd go to the chippy. And then we could stay up late and watch telly late, which was great. And then Saturday morning, we would go jumble sailing and bring goodies back. And then we would stay Saturday night as well. And I think we used to be allowed to watch Ironside, which my mum would never let me watch. So that was a super treat. And then Sunday morning, we'd all get back on the bus and go, or the buzz, as you say, pronounce it in Birmingham, and we'd go back home. And my aunt would have a bath at our house, and then she'd stay for Sunday lunch, and then she'd go back. And that's what we did for several years while we were still quite young. But my parents had never visited my aunt's house for years because she had cats. And my dad was allergic to cats. So they had no idea what the house was like. But I don't think they would have stopped us, if I'm honest. I still think we would have gone. Times were easier. People were less worried about things. And I said to my dad, you know, when I started doing this as a job, because when I first did the work, it didn't really click. It sounds really crazy, but I just thought my aunt was an individual that was just like that. And that was it.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my dad about my choice of career later on. And he said, oh, there was somebody else that lived up her road who had these issues as well. So, you know, as I said, that was a long time ago. So it's been around for a very long time.
It has. And when I saw that it was two of your aunts, I wondered whether they perhaps lived together. I know I had several pairs of aunts who never married. That was always the phrase. They never married. And so the sisters lived together through their entire life. But it's interesting that two separate aunts in separate houses, both.
Well, I've considered this because my older auntie, they're all dead now. So I can talk about them without fear of being overheard. And also both of those aunties didn't have any children, so there are no bits of family left here.
Yeah.
But so my oldest auntie, and my mum's oldest sister, she didn't just have one husband, she had two. So she had her boyfriend and her husband who lived with her. So she was a bit of
Nice.
Bit of a one. And so I know exactly what you mean. My favourite auntie lived with my grandma, and she much more fitted that spinster auntie bill. The reason why ultimately I've realised, you know, doing this work, but that I thought it was my grandma who hoarded and my aunt was sort of protecting her. But yeah, actually it was the other way around. It was my aunt who hoarded. And she was stuck in the 40s, my auntie, because her, you know, finally realised her fiancé went off to fight the Second World War, and he did come back, but he came back shell-shocked, and they never got married, and she never met anybody else. And I realised this from when she did finally pass away, and I cleared her house, because she didn't stay in that house. It was a council house, and they were knocking the whole street down. This was early 70s.
Yeah.
And she was one, you know, that one that she hadn't left, and the wrecking ball was outside the house waiting for her to go. So in the end, all her belongings just got taken away by a local dealer, and she had to sort of watch them being sold off. And she only lived a couple more years in the new flat that she lived in. But when I did clear her home, I found lots of love letters and poems, and that was, you know, that was the sort of the end of the story. Then I understood that it was her was the one that hoarded. And when my grandma died, she got worse. So it did fit the perfect, you know, the sort of perfect description of somebody that's been traumatized by loss, and then that gets compounded. And yeah, no, so, but she was the loveliest, kindest lady. I still hope she's looking down at me and laughing, because I did used to try and clear things up, and she just used to laugh at me, but she wouldn't let me do it. But one time, just got to tell you, this is my favourite funny story. So she wouldn't open Christmas presents either, which used to drive me wild. Well, both of us, because it was like, how can you not open a Christmas present? And she used to take ages to open them. And she always used to put this one in the cupboard. And I'd say, can I open that now? Because like it's March. And she'd go, no, I know what it is. It's a Christmas pudding. They buy me a Christmas pudding every year, and they keep. And it was like, oh, all right then. Anyway, finally, I persuaded her to let me open this in the summer, I think it was by then. And her friends had changed their mind and bought her a pork pie. So it was just this like fur ball that was inside this Christmas wrapper. But, yeah, and she was like, and I just gave her a look, and she went, I know what you're thinking. And I said, yeah, open your Christmas presents.
And especially as a child, where you can't get to them fast enough.
I mean, how can you understand that? You just don't get it at all. You know,
I bought my mum some chocolates for Mother's Day, and she said, I'm going to have one every day. And I was just like, just eat them.
Just gorge. That's the point of chocolates.
So how did you get into decluttering?
So I was looking for an interesting career change, because I'd been working in outplacement, it's called. So that's when you go into, I used to, through a company that I worked for, go into factories where they'd made the whole workforce, they'd made them all redundant, and then they would send a company in, the company that I was working with, who would like work with those people losing their job for a year, so that it was a gradual redundancy, and we helped people to fill out, you know, create CVs and do interview techniques and all this. And it was a sad job. But it was also really rewarding, because you saw people change and grow, you know, and often people in factories have got those jobs because their dad had that job, or their, you know, and so a very few people just couldn't change, but most of them could. So I thought, I'm going to take my own advice. And my advice to people had been, you've got a year, so start looking at things that interest you. You might as well do a job that you like, you know. And so I took my own advice, and I kept coming up with houses. And I thought, well, I don't think I want to work in an estate agent. It was like, this, and I don't really want to be an interior designer, but you know, I am sort of interested in this. So there were two options. One of them was inventory making for flats. So I started doing that. I started doing that because I had lots of like contacts and friends in a state agency, which is why I knew I didn't want to do it. And so that was quite nice because that's a job that, you know, you go to empty houses and you just write, you do the opposite to what I do in the job I do now. You look at every little scratch, stain, mark, things that broken, things, well, and then you write it all up and then you give it to the new tenant so that they're not going to get blamed for it. And then they use that when they leave. So I started a company doing that, which did quite well. And then I saw this advert for a declutterer, and I'd never seen that term. And I thought, oh, that's interesting.
When was this, roughly?
This was about 2005, 2006. So then I looked up declutterers, and I found out there was an association of declutterers called APDO, which is still there. And at that time, they had about 50 people. Maybe less. So I went through all the websites and tried to find somebody local because I'm in Birmingham, and there was nobody. But I found one lady that had more than one person working with her. She was in Essex. So I contacted her and I said, look, I'm really interested in this. Is there any training? What do you need to do? And she phoned me straight away and she said, there isn't really any training because there wasn't then. And she said, but if you can get to London easily, then you can come and work with me a few times and that'll be your training. And it was like, okay, I'll do that. And so that was how I started.
Amazing.
So I enjoyed it. I had the odd, because she was quite big. So she had a lot of people contacting her for, you know, anything north of Watford she gave to me because, you know, she was down in Essex. So she did the southern jobs. And eventually, one of the jobs that came in was from a local authority. And they said, look, we are the family intervention team and we're reaching out to see if you can help this lady who's had her kids removed. And that was like, wow, gosh, you know, this is the dark side. But there was something in my head that went, I really want to do this. And so I wasn't very helpful when they phoned up because I was like, I don't know. Yeah. But then I said, look, all I know from what I've read about decluttering is that hoarding is a mental health issue and it's a long-term piece of work as opposed to the decluttering jobs, which were a one-off. And I said, so with that in mind, let's see if 6 months as a period would be okay and at a sliding scale of visits. So starting off weekly and then seeing how we get
there.
And they went for that because they had to ask for funding and so they needed some guidelines and I just came up with it off the top of my head. But anyway, they said yes. So in the meantime, I then sent off for all the books I could find on hoarding disorder, which were all from America at the time. And so I soaked them up like a sponge, you know, because I've always, always loved and been totally interested in cognitive neuroscience and psychology. It's just always been a thing that I've read, you know, voluntarily because I find it fascinating. So the two sort of met up then and I worked with this lady and she was brilliant. She was absolutely amazing. And so she set me off really well. And I eventually ended up working with her for 9 months, not six. But then the local authority, which was Sandwell, so they're sort of next door to Birmingham, they said, what did you do? And I said, I don't know really. And they said, well, can you work out what you did and put it in a training course? And that was like, oh, something else I've never done.
Yeah.
But I did. And I asked, you know, I asked the lady that I'd worked with, I said, look, this is how I'm going to structure it. I was just honest. I just talked about what I did. But it was based on the books that I'd read, but also, you know, when you're reading somebody that you're working with, I'd like to think that I was, you know, I was picking up signals from her rather than imposing my will because, you know, that's how I've always worked. So, and that took off then. And so I went back to the lady that I did the, and I said, you know, we could do work with local authorities and, you know, this, blah, 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 blah. And she went, good luck with that. And I said, oh, she said, I have no interest in doing that at all. And I said, well, would you mind if I just set up on my own? She said, no, of course I wouldn't. So I did. I carried on doing declutter work for her for a couple of years, but I started Cloud's End as a social enterprise with a view to working with people that are in social housing and that are in difficulty and have no money, you know, and can't afford to do. So, yeah, that's how I started.
So how does Cloud's End work? What is it that you offer? Is it to local authorities or is it to individuals, would you say, in terms of who contacts
you? It's both. So when I first started, as I said, there was nothing. I couldn't believe, because I phoned round. I thought, well, I want to do this work. I had no intention of starting a social enterprise. I just want to find somebody else a bit like the lady that I did the subcontracting work for that did this work, and I would offer to work with them. And there was nothing. And that's what spurred me to, like, I just couldn't believe there was nothing. But then, of course, nobody at that time, hoarding wasn't even recognised. So people were like, it's made up. And it's like, no, it isn't. Because I'd asked Sandwell and I said, do you have other cases like this? And they went, yeah, loads. And I said, well, what do you do? If you've asked me, what do you do? And they went, we just do forced clearances. And I said, well, talk me through that. How does it work? And so when they explained this horrible, and the lady that I worked with had two of those already. And clearly they hadn't worked. They just made her worse.
I was just going to say, I'm convinced that unless it's an absolutely extreme, unavoidable situation, yes, I think it causes so much trauma.
Absolutely.
And then because hoarders are people who use hoarding to cope, they then cope with the trauma by filling back up again.
I would say 9 times out of 10, people have already had big traumas happen in their life. Yeah. Some of them might be buried in their childhood, but the thing about trauma is it's cumulative.
Yeah.
You know, and it just adds to itself. So you've got trauma which you experience in your body, so your body remembers it. There's a great book called The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel
van
Kolk. Yeah. And, because it does remind you that you store these traumas in your nervous system and then something else happens and it just adds to it. So somebody comes along and just throws your life away, then of course that's going to be traumatic. And so I just said to them, well, I think that sounds like the definition of madness. You know, you keep doing the same thing over and over again, getting the same negative results. And they said, well, that's why we asked you to do a training course. So they were trying, you know, to have a look at how it could be different. And so then I start, because I'd contacted lots of other local authorities to see if they knew of people doing this work, then I went back to some of those and said, would you like some training in hoarding based on what I've learned?
Yeah.
And they said, yes, we would, because they didn't accept that hoarding was an issue, but they knew it was because all of them had loads of cases.
Yeah.
But they didn't have a hoarding budget, so they couldn't do one-to-one work, but they could get trained. They all had a training budget. So that's how I survived for the next 10 years, mostly doing training, occasionally finding individual small pots of funding to work with one person. But I also ran support groups, which the first one I ran myself, because as a social enterprise, you should do, you know, pro bono things. And so I did. And there was a big need for that. But that was great for me because these are all learning, you know, the learning that you get from a support group is incredible. Everybody learns, you know, it's a circle of learning. So it supports, but it teaches, you know, and it's great. So I did that. And then Birmingham Council asked me to do 4 more. And I said, no, can't do 4, but I'll do 2. They paid me for those for a year. And then they went, oh, you're on your own now. So then I had 3 support groups, but I could just about manage. So, and they were at fire stations, so they gave me the room for free. So I only really had to fund the tea and coffee, but they were really good. And then in 2019, Birmingham City Council came to me and said, we finally got some funding for a hoarding project. would you like, and before they'd finished the sentence, I was like, yes. And so that's what I've been doing for the past 3.5 years. And that was like the culmination of what I've always wanted to do. And they have been amazing with me. So they've given me a lot of money. That means I can help a huge amount of people. And strangely enough, I do more clearing and cleaning than I ever thought. Not me personally, because Cloud's End's just me. So otherwise I would not be talking to you tonight. I would still be clearing and cleaning. I have been clearing actually today, but I've got some fantastic subcontractors. But we do a lot of requested clears and cleans because the people that do the work are trained and they understand that their first job is to make people feel safe. Then they talk about what we might do. And so that's in the guise of because you've been threatened by your housing officer or, you know, whatever it is that we're addressing. And so I was very surprised at how many people took up that opportunity because I would give people a list and say, look, if you'd like to be part of the project, we can provide you with a skip. We can talk to you on the foot. This was in COVID because, of course, my, you know, my dream came true and then COVID tried to stymie it, but it didn't.
Yeah.
I can talk to you on the phone. Normally I would have come to visit you. But yeah, we can, because skip companies carried on working and so did the clearance people. And so I just gave them a list of things I could offer them. And so many people took, well, the first 2-year project, we did 48 clearances.
Wow.
And provided 72 skips. And those are all voluntary. But yes, yeah, so I was really surprised at that. And because it's treated the right way and it's given to somebody as an option, not as an enforcement, I think that's why it's, you know, it's done what it's done. Yeah, so that's what we do. So prior to then I could just offer training. Which, you know, as I said, most local authorities have training budgets. So it was for housing, for charities, for social services, for mixed. My favorite training is mixed groups because my whole thing is.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You should work as a multi-agency group.
Yeah.
You should support each other and your client. And that's good networking as well when you do that. But now I can help individuals because I've been given a budget to do that as well, which is sort of my dream come true, to be honest. So, yeah, that's what we do. That's what we do.
Let's try something new. I've had an idea for a new segment for the podcast, and it involves you. Introducing listener voicemails. Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail and leave me a brief recording to play on future podcast episodes. Let's have a go and see how it works. Let me know what you're thinking at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/voicemail.
So we offer as much advice as we can. And within the project is very heavily based on training, mentoring, multi-agency work, encouraging And then I also have this money for individuals. And then the support group went online. And I also have a WhatsApp group, which is the best thing I've ever done. My WhatsApp group is so phenomenally successful. Not, this is not me crowing. This is only to the people that are in the group. But it is such a supportive, safe place for people to go. And but then people post photos, don't they? So somebody will go, well, how did you manage to do that then? You know, and they'll go, well, I did this and I tried that. And we, you know, and you know, the related topics that we talk about in support groups, people try this stuff out. It works. They post it, you know.
I find that with the podcast, I might find something that worked for me and I will talk about it on the podcast. And somebody will get in touch and say, I tried it and it really worked. Or I will say, I don't know how to do this thing. And someone will suggest something. And then I might say, well, it didn't quite work that way. But what I did was this. And it's a real collaboration, even just podcast wise. So I can imagine with a WhatsApp group that's very back and forth, that could be really supportive.
Honestly, it's just lovely. You know, it's and now they've started visiting each other. They've got little posses together to work with each. It's just fabulous. It makes me so happy to read some of the stuff. I mean, obviously, I check in every day, a couple of times a day, but it's not run by me. It's run by everybody that's part of it. And we've even got two people from the US in it, because for Hoarding Awareness Week, we always try to do something every day of that week. So we started Hoarding Awareness Week in 2014 together with the fire service, and we launched it at the House of Parliament, which was really exciting. And then I sort of took it over in the end, because we sort of ran it in a multi-agency, but yeah, mainly from London. But then think people started, when they changed jobs, they didn't carry it on. So I said, look, I'll take it. I'll run the website. And then I've got an apprentice now that helps me with my training company. And so she's just done marvelous things. So this year we do a webinar every day, which is free. You just go on Eventbrite and you can.
Yeah, I will link to them from the website. There are some really interesting ones. There's one in particular that I really want to go to, but I will be at work.
No.
That's a shame.
Sorry. We don't record them because they're massively public, you know.
Yeah.
And so we get big audiences for them. But yes, so we've got the four webinars, and then on the Friday we have like a very open forum, and people from all over the world join us then, and that's great. And so this one guy said, oh, we haven't got anything like this in New York. And we said, well, join us. So he does, because I think they're 5 hours behind us. So it's doable. You know, it's 7 o'clock. So it's lunchtime for them.
Yeah.
Just after lunchtime. So, yeah, that's rather nice. I quite like that. We couldn't invite him to the Christmas dinner, though. We were going to just, like, put a phone on the table, but it was so noisy that it would have deafened him if we'd have done it. But, that's nice. So, Hoarding Awareness Week is a great opportunity for, you know, exactly what it says on the tin, raising awareness.
And it's still needed, even though, you know, you first came across it, well, as a child, but unknowingly, but then first came across it professionally 15 years ago. And there's more awareness now than there was then, but that, I think, is in the sense that people have heard of it now. Yeah. I think what the awareness that hasn't spread so much is combating some of the misconceptions and that side of it.
And I think the other thing that is, for me, education, as I said, around this is crucial, because there are two sides to this. So the people who I'm training are visiting hoarded homes, and those homes affect them. They will have a little trauma, fight or flight reaction to a hoarded home, which we all do. It's just it's part of our drive, because it affects our survival being in a very closed in environment because we can't see how to escape. So this is like primal brain function. You can't stop it. But if you don't know that you're going to react, your flash reactions are going to, they're going to sort of be picked up by the person that you're supposed to be making feel safe, and you're actually making them feel less safe. You are in a state of panic. They're in a state of panic. They need their stuff. You need it gone. And if you don't know that equation, then all sorts of things go wrong. But if you do know it, you can make it work for everybody concerned. And so for me, that is my big mantra, is helping people to understand that that happens and then teaching them how to deal with those triggers. And it does work. It really does work. But people don't realize things. So what you naturally want to do when you walk into a hoarded home that isn't yours is clear it.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who you are. Your brain, your nervous system actually is telling you to clear it so that you can feel safe, except the person you're talking to needs it to feel safe. So, you know, you can see this is immediately oil and water.
Yeah. On the Cloud's End website, it says the company's prevailing belief is that the process has to be fun or it won't succeed. Tell me about that.
Well, I think hoarding is a very serious issue and has some very dire consequences. But I think most people have got a funny bone. And if you can find it and help them to smile and help the process to be understandable but lighthearted, because as I said, most of the people I work with had some awful things happen in their life. And so if you can take a bit of fun along with you as well and help people to laugh and, you know, make light of certain things, I'm not laughing at people at all. I'm finding things that we can smile about together.
Oh, there can absolutely be hilarious moments in hoarded homes.
It's fantastic.
The ridiculousness of it sometimes strikes you.
Yeah.
Even when it's your home and you just go, oh, my God. It is funny.
Sometimes I'll go, so tell me about the socks then, you know, because I've suddenly found like a huge, another box full of socks, you know, things like that. But if I've established that that's how I talk with people, because that's how I talk all the time, you know, then we can just have a laugh. And I can go, oh, do you know what? I've found some more socks. Thank goodness. Thank goodness, because we might have run out. You know, and it's just things like that. It's just things like that that I think make life a little bit easier. That's all. But also the idea is that if I try and get people to be like this as well, then when they visit tenants, clients, citizens, depending on, you know, what agency they're from, the idea would be that your visit is pleasant and that your client looks forward to your visit. If that happens, job done. You know, you're there, really. But lots of people are still, like I said, actually, they don't realise they're actually working on their own nerves. And so they get very officious then and very like, oh, I'm a tenancy enforcement officer, you know, and it's like,
Yeah, I can understand why somebody in that role might think, I've got to be stern about this. I've got to be clear that this is unacceptable. But if the person, if the tenant then obviously feels like they're in trouble, that's when they'll shut down. Whereas if the person is, you know, just even just respectful, like this, we need to address this. It's not okay, but you know, we're going to work together or however that looks. There's a lot in that initial approach and the ongoing approach, I think, that would affect how the person who hoards responds to the entire interaction.
Absolutely. And it's because the way I sort of try and get people to feel how they should be, if you know what I mean, is if you were ill and somebody came around and told you off, A, for being ill, and then told you you need to get better in 2 weeks' time, or you would lose your house, then that just wouldn't happen, would it? Well, I hope not, you know, not in Britain, at least. But that's what's going on when you're doing this. And if you can think about it that way, so this, I try not to criticize people that go in because they don't know this, and this is my chosen specialism. So it's not like you ought to know, because why would they know it? Lots of GPs don't know it. So
why would you be training them if they already knew?
Exactly. But I'm trying to give them a different way of thinking, which allows them to understand. And if you understand what's going on, then your brain stops being, and it starts going, do you know what? I wonder if this might be useful to you, or that's interesting, or, you know, and then the whole dynamic changes because people feel genuinely, as you said, respected. And what did somebody say to me the other day? It was a podcast that we did that we just put up. And this lady said, I just wished that the social workers had stopped addressing my belongings and just spoken to me, you know? And when you put it like that, it's like, oh God, yeah, of course. So yeah, it's a big ask, but I think the more of us that talk about it, the more, yeah, I'd really like to see TV shows, but I want some, oh no, I'd like to see TV shows that are done with some empathy and interest instead of shock horror probe. You know, I don't really like that. I know why they do it, but it does make me sigh, you know, because television is so powerful and they can pass across any message if they try hard. But I think that would be, you know, that would be something clever that raises people's awareness without realizing it does, perhaps. That would be nice.
Yeah, I have similar issues with most of the TV shows. I think it's entertaining when you traumatize somebody to that degree and they start screaming about a sock, but it's not respectful, and it's not
informative, and it's not fair. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think anybody learns from that. All they learn is that it's all right to be judgmental. And it's, you know, it's all right to write boo and all these awful comments without actually remembering that, you know, but for the grace of God, that could be you in 2 years' time. So you, because that's the other thing, the pandemic has given us a whole new swathe of people that have been traumatized by the pandemic. And I knew that it was, well, that half the world joined in, didn't they, with toilet paper and hand gel. So that I was sort of quite pleased about, because I thought, well, right, at least I can say, well, what made you do that then? But yes, there's a whole other group of people now that are just coming through that we're just starting to meet, that when we sort of have conversations with them, it's sort of like, so tell me what happened. And they go, well, when everything stopped, all my support stopped, and I just panicked, and I thought the shops were going to, you know, they were going to, we'd never be able to, but so yeah, perfect storm. But I did have one lady contact me, and it had the opposite effect on her. She said, I've hoarded for many years. And she said, my argument has always been, what if the shop's shut? And she said, of course, I always get the twice a year, no, not even twice a year, one day a year and a couple of half days, and that's it. And she said, suddenly it was nearly an option. And she said, I had like, should I felt this massive wave of vindication? And she said, then I could let go of it. So you never know, you know, you never know. So I'm always fascinated by the reasons, you know, what causes that flip? What causes that twist that goes, actually, do you know what? I can do this. I've seen it now. I understand, you know, sometimes it's usually when, sadly, it's usually dire circumstances that often cause this. But sometimes, you know, it's just somebody listening to you, somebody that allows you to talk about you and then says, well, I might be able to help if you're interested, you know? And so there's a lot of, and that's obviously what happens in the WhatsApp group. Everybody gets seen, heard and understood. They don't have to do any you know, talk it when somebody says, oh, I've got a bit of a full house. And, you know, this is always the discussion in support group where they go, well, I've got a bit of a full house and I've got problems with it. And Joe Public goes, well, I'll come round and help you. And it's like, no, but when I say I've got a full house.
Yeah.
And that's what doesn't have to happen in support group, which is lovely. You know, it's people don't need to explain anything. They can hit the ground running, you know, and everybody understands. But a fascinating world this is. It's such a joy and a privilege to do this. And as I said, Birmingham sort of giving me the opportunity to prove really what I've been trying to say in training, because everybody likes data and stats. And now I've got them. Yeah, but I knew that I would get them. But now there's a real good template in Birmingham. And from what I can see, certainly for the next 3.5 years, they're going to carry on doing this. And so, so I'm just going to keep promoting Birmingham as being the first hoarding aware city.
I like that.
We've got a charter. I've developed a charter because Birmingham loves a charter. They've got loads. So we're going to get like this symbolic signing of the charter at the big town hall because they've just refurbed it. I've just got to wangle the room for free because I haven't got any funds to pay for it, but I'm sure they'll let me have it.
And as well as the training events in Hoarding Awareness Week, there is also an opportunity for people who hoard to share their own story.
Yes, please.
With my Hoarding Awareness Week. Tell me about that.
So, as I said a bit earlier, I've got this lovely apprentice called Kirsty. Now, Kirsty has ADHD, and that was actually why I wanted her to work with me, because I knew that she knew a lot, you know. And so she's very keen. This was her idea. And so she'd like people to send in either a written little testimonial or a video. And naughtily, I can't remember. There's two questions that she asked. That's on the website. There's just two questions. So if you're doing a video, you just answer the questions and send a little video in.
The first is to talk about your place in relation to hoarding disorder and behaviour. And the second is why you think Hoarding Awareness Week is important.
Yes, that's it. Thank you. And yes, so either record it visually with a video, record it audio if you don't want to be seen but don't mind speaking, or if you don't want to do either of those, just a quick, you know, couple of sentences that we can then share all these my Hoarding Awareness Week thoughts, because then they can eventually go onto the website and hopefully we'll get more and more people joining in and adding their thoughts, which, you know, they need to be heard. And so this is the opportunity to hear it. And then during the week, Kirsty's she's going walkabouts around Birmingham city centre, and she's going to interview people and ask them if they've heard of Hoarding Awareness Week, what they know about hoarding. And that'll be great fun. So that'll be on the website as well soon when we've gathered all the video footage.
Amazing.
I know. So I love Kirsty. I'm so grateful that I've got, because I've worked on my own for so many years, and it's so delightful to have somebody that knows how to do things like social media, which I've always been like, I don't really get it. I'm too old. I'm not the real demographic for, you know, this. And she's lovely and perfectly formed for doing TikTok videos, and which we haven't done yet, but we will. And things like that. So, yeah, she's great. I'm really, really happy to have her.
So if people want to find Cloud's End online, if they want to find the Hoarding Awareness Week website, anything like that, oh, and the Hoarding Stuff podcast, where can they do that?
So Cloud's End website is www.cloudsend, so cloudsend.org.uk. And the podcasts are on that website, so there's a link to them. But you can also get them on Spotify, I think, if you type in Hoarding Stuff. And then Hoarding Awareness Week is also a website unto itself, which is www.hoardingawarenessweek.org.uk.
Amazing. Well, Heather, thank you so much. It's been really good to talk to you and find out more about what you're doing, which I love it. Sounds great.
Thank you. And thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome.
Do you want to be a de-hoarding darling? You can be now at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. If you love the podcast and want a bit extra, you can finally sign up to subscribe. Members will get an exclusive monthly post with an additional top tip, some podcast and music recommendations, and a personal update from me about how things are going. Find out the full details at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. So my top tip this week is from the Food Heaven podcast with Jessica Jones, and her guest is Gretchen Rubin, and she is talking about what to focus on, and I really like this. Have a listen.
Oh, and another thing I think is important is to focus on action, not outcomes. If I'm like, I'm going to write 1,000 words every day, that is an action that I can follow. But then outcomes are often, they're just harder to control. Sometimes they're totally not within our control. And sometimes that we just don't have a good sense of what our actions are leading to. But actions are very much within what we can consciously direct.
So think about that in terms of when you are setting a goal, whether that's a big goal or whether it's just what you're going to do in the next half hour. See whether that changes your experience of it. Let me know how you get on. Okay, thank you for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at That Hoarder and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder. To find out more about how you can support the podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. There may be links in this podcast that earn me money. This doesn't come at any extra cost to you if you ever make a purchase through the links, and it helps to support the future of the podcast.
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune. In a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny, Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People on Broadway through June 16th only.